for the pizza. Let me find my phone. She got up, holding her bottle. Thanks, Sean. Sean turned and regarded her from the doorway into the living room.
Meg, I love you. You're my non-flaky, grounded, totally cool sister, though we're not related. And you're also my bestest friend. And I expect you to tell it to me straight, or gay, whatever. I expect your honesty, and I can rely on it and on you. I hope that you feel the same way about me and that you'll trust me on some things.
She pointed her beer bottle at her.
Trust me on this. Second chances are lifetimes apart. Don't push her away again. You've got nothing to lose letting her in. Nothing. You'll still be you when everything's said and done, only this time, Gina will be with you. Watch. You'll see. Now keep that demon out for a while and take it for drinks. Get to know it, she arched an eyebrow. Because really, there's nothing to be scared of.
She air-kissed Meg and went into the living room. Meg sighed and looked over at Moonshine. His expression seemed to say, Hey, I'm just a dog, but you're an idiot if you don't listen to Sean.
Thanks,
Meg said to him sarcastically. He continued to regard her, and Meg sighed and scratched his head. She stood and went to join Sean in the living room. Meg got home around 11, and after she let Moonshine out back, she checked the voicemail on her landline.
Hi, Meg, it's your mom, came Irene's voice.
Meg sighed, listening.
I thought I'd just call to check in with you. I just wanted to let you know that Phil, you remember him, right? Well, he'll be headed out to Colorado around the middle of July, Ed says, and I just know he'd love to see you again.
Meg laughed, a harsh, brittle sound in the room. Not for the reasons you think, she muttered.
So you might want to send him an email and let him know your schedule.
Fucking hell, fuck no. She closed her eyes and tried to calm herself.
Anyway, please contact Phil as soon as you can.
She paused breathily, and Meg waited for the punchline.
But you might want to get a more feminine outfit. I think you look really good in powder blue.
Oh, hell no. No, Irene did not just say that.
Bye now.
And the message ended. Meg thought about how ridiculous that was, doing her rounds in powder blue or spending her day at the clinic like that. Pus, blood, cow spit, horse shit, and assorted mammalian body fluids spewed, bled, and excreted all over a powder blue suit. She swallowed quickly because a laugh threatened to choke her. Could be worse, she thought. Irene could live here. Meg put the phone back on its deck and went to check on Moonshine before she got ready for bed. Her cell phone dinged with a text message. She picked it up off the coffee table and read it. I know it's late. Just wanted to say I miss you. She grinned and speed dialed Gina.
Hiya,
Gina answered.
Oh my God, I miss you so much. It's a physical pain.
Meg laughed. I miss you too.
I know, it's late there. You've got to get all rested up to work. Just wanted to check in.
Anytime.
So, what are you doing the weekend after the 4th?
Gina asked after a few seconds.
I'd ask about the 4th, but I'm supposed to go to Arizona to cover a story.
Arizona?
It's not a done deal. Basically, I'm going if I don't have to interview for the state's job. They said that's a distinct possibility either Thursday or Friday. If I do interview for the state's job, then I'm not going to Arizona. If I interview, then I'm supposed to go to Sacramento and participate in the family 4th thing. My grandpa loves that holiday.
I remember that he does.
Part of the immigrant experience, you know? Go all rah-rah for the history of your new homeland.
And it's a great excuse to fill a house with Morellis and Giordano's.
Meg laughed. Anyway, back to the original question. What are you doing the weekend after the 4th?
Funny you should ask. I was hoping to see you. Do you have a better idea? Meg teased.
There is no better idea. I was thinking I'd come there. I could maybe come out on that Thursday. It's okay if you have to work and all. I don't mind hanging out in Laramie while you're at work.
Meg grinned. That would be awesome.
Cool. Okay. I think I'm hyperventilating with excitement, Gina said, pretending to be breathless. I'll get the ticket, and don't worry. I'll rent a car in Denver.
You sure?
Absolutely. It's been a while since I was out that way. And since I'll probably be getting in while you're working, I'll drive and do some sightseeing.
I'll help you pay for the car.
No, it's not a big deal. Plus, I don't want to borrow yours. You've got to work and all.
Meg relented. Okay, but you have to promise me something.
Anything.
Please don't ever ask me to wear a powder blue suit at any kind of function.
Excuse me? Gina sounded puzzled. Promise me. Definitely, that's not your color. You look good in darker blues, or maybe even sky blues, but not that.
What? My mother.
Say no more, Gina said with a laugh.
She's convinced that Phil,
That guy I told you about who she dragged to the DR over my birthday is coming out here to hook up with me. Meg plopped onto the couch.
That might piss his fiancé off, Gina said.
A little.
You think?
Meg snorted. So that's the color Irene wants me to wear on my date with Phil. Gina started laughing.
I'm sorry, she said after a bit. I know your mom is a tough topic for you, but you kind of have to laugh.
Yeah, otherwise I'd cry, Meg said dryly. Or beat your head against a wall. I don't think it's worth that.
Meg sighed heavily. How the hell did that woman give birth to me? I mean, we don't even look alike.
Maybe she didn't, Gina said cryptically. Maybe you were switched with someone else. No, wait, you look a lot like your dad.
And he was there to see the glorious event.
Meg reached for her glass. I've got it. Your mom was switched with someone else. When nobody was looking, they were all completely enraptured with your arrival. Someone hauled your real mom out of the bed and put Miss Friend of Jesus in her place.
That would explain a lot. Except she didn't realize Jesus was her friend until I was 21. She picked at a loose thread on her shorts. And actually, Jesus was probably a pretty cool guy. I think Irene might actually be able to annoy him, too.
So maybe it's a recessive gene. It only expresses when children come out as lesbians or gay men. As soon as you said the magic words, Mom, I'm so gay, it's not even funny, the gene clicked in and wham, friend of Jesus. She paused. Except Jesus probably would be your friend and not hers.
Damn, there goes that theory.
Sorry, babe. I don't know what's up with your mom.
Meg opened her mouth to reply when it hit her. Gina had called her babe. It sent a thrill cascading down her spine, and she knew a huge, goofy smile erupted across her face. I love you so much that I need at least 3 other languages to express it, she finally said.
We can work on that,
Gina responded, and Meg heard the smile in her voice. As long as I don't have to wear powder blue.
Your wish is my command.
They talked a while longer, and when Meg finally settled into bed, her heart seemed to flutter in her chest like butterflies. She lay on her back, staring up into the dark. What the hell was she scared of? She loved Gina. Gina loved her. She thought about what Sean had said earlier about letting Gina in, and even if it meant living apart to accommodate each of their lives, Meg knew she'd do it. She was ready. She thought about the bombing, though it made her stomach hurt, and the nightmares Gina kept under guard. And if that was something else they'd have to deal with, so be it. She was ready for a long haul. Now she just needed to figure out how that would work and how to ask Gina.
Chapter 32. It didn't seem to matter how early Meg got into work, because Ginny was always there. Today, she'd already put the coffee on. Meg could smell it when she came in.
Hey, Ginny, she called out.
Good morning,
Ginny said as she stuck her head in from the front.
If you want coffee, bring your cup.
Will do.
Meg offloaded her bag in her office and grabbed her cup. Mark's door was partially open, and she heard him on the phone. She poked her head in and waved, and he grinned and waved back.
Coffee?
Meg mouthed. And he shook his head and pointed at his own cup on his desk. She gave him a thumbs up and went to the coffee pot out front where she poured herself a cup. She added a sugar and a bit of the powdered creamer, thinking about how Gina still took her coffee black, including her espresso after dinner. She smiled.
Anything planned for the 4th?
Ginny asked.
No. You sure?
Meg looked over at her. She was wearing dark blue scrubs with pink dogs and cats all over them.
California?
Ginny asked. She smiled.
No, Gina's either going to Arizona for a work thing, or she has to stay in LA for a work thing. Then she has to go to Sacramento for a family thing. But she is coming the week after, and yes, you will get to meet her.
Well, that's exciting.
Meg went behind the counter and checked her schedule. It would be cool to see her on the 4th, though, she sipped her coffee. I entertained the idea of flying to Sacramento if she doesn't go to Arizona.
So keep it in mind as a possibility,
Meg looked at her.
When will she know whether she has to go to Arizona?
I don't know.
Find out. And if she's not going to Arizona, then go. If Haley can't take moonshine, I will,
Meg laughed.
What is this, matchmaking central?
Ginny smiled.
Let's just say I'd love to see the kind of happiness that she's bringing to you continue. And when was the last time you did something kind of crazy? like fly out on a whim to visit someone who makes your heart go from 0 to 60 in under 3 seconds.
Meg flushed. You work hard, Meg. No matter what you're doing, you don't half-ass it. You haven't taken a vacation since you started here.
So if Gina doesn't have to go to Arizona, why don't you do something crazy and go to Sacramento?
I'll keep it in mind. You do that.
Ginny handed her a piece of paper. Here's today's schedule, so you don't have to keep coming out here. She smiled. But then I don't have an excuse to visit with you. Ginny laughed.
Hi, everybody,
Anna said as she came in from the back.
Morning, Meg said.
Your first appointment is in 20 minutes, Doc,
Anna said before she sat down to log in at one of the other computers.
Mrs. Finch and Princess.
Which really should be the title of a movie.
Meg took another sip of coffee. Thanks. She looked over at Ginny, who just smiled at her.
Let me know, she said.
Okay, okay. In other matters, she raised her eyebrows. The paperwork on the restraining order is working its way through the system. Laura is still at my house, and she's got an appointment with a lawyer about a divorce.
That's good news. Who owns the ranch?
She does. She wants to talk to the lawyer to make sure that's going to remain in play. She may have to settle with Bill, but ultimately she'd like him to go back to Cheyenne.
That's where they met?
Ginny nodded. Cheyenne's too close as far as I'm concerned. She took her glasses off and let them hang around her neck on their bedazzled string. It's all under control. Focus on other matters. Meg started to respond, but the phone rang, and Ginny turned to answer it. So Meg went to the back to check with Nicole about Mrs. Finch, though she did continue to mull the idea of seeing Gina over the 4th. But today was Friday. The 4th was a week from Saturday. What if Gina didn't know whether she was going to Arizona until Monday or Tuesday? It would be a bitch to get a flight out. But how much fun would that be, to fly out to Sacramento and surprise her? She could even fly out the morning of the 4th, then fly back Monday. Ginny had said to do something crazy. Maybe she would, and then she'd see her again a few days after that. At lunch, she was able to check her text messages. Gina had sent one, and Meg smiled at how her heart seemed to skip a beat. Got the interview, Friday morn. Flying to SAC Friday. After, Arizona canceled, but bad news. Have to cancel a visit the next weekend. Call when you can. Love ya. She stared at the text and wondered if Ginny was psychic. Meg checked her watch. 30 minutes before her next appointment, barring emergencies. She speed dialed Gina, who picked up.
Hey, cowgirl, guess you got my text.
Yeah, what's up?
A fucking assignment that I cannot get out of and that can't be rescheduled. I'll tell you about it later. I'm so fucking pissed you have no idea. I raised hell with a home office, but no deal. And I don't even really get the whole weekend in Sacramento. I have meetings early Monday morning, so I'll go back to LA Sunday.
Hey, it's okay. What about the weekend after, the one we'd planned? I'll come visit you, wherever you are.
That would be the best thing ever, but I'm not sure where I'm going to be. A lot hinges on this interview. It's for the stateside job, and if they offer it to me, well then, I've got some decisions to make. My leave is technically up soon, and I'm getting the feeling that they're not into extending it too much, since I've already been kind of working. They might do another week, but I'm not sure I feel like pushing them. She sighed, and it sounded frustrated. I don't think I want to go back to work overseas, but they're talking about sending me to London for a few months if I stay with the job I have now, at least for a while. And they're talking about a nice raise if I stay in that position.
Meg's stomach clenched. What about the stateside job?
If I get the offer, it means I have to start in 2 weeks, but at least I'd be based in LA. She sighed again. So the next couple of weeks determine my fate.
No, you do, she chuckled.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I'm having all kinds of thoughts. Swear if I could, I'd just disappear. Reporter on the lam. And I'd write under a pseudonym for the Laramie paper or something. Or hell, the Saratoga paper.
She muttered something that Meg didn't catch.
I really miss you, Meg. I'm not sure what the hell I'm doing right now. But the one thing I do know is I will not go anywhere until I see you again. So I will figure out a way to see you either in the next 2 weeks or before I have to be somewhere else. Count on it. Shit. I have to take this other call. I'll talk to you later, okay? Love you.
Love you too, Meg said. But she wasn't sure Gina heard before she hung up. She slid her phone into her back pocket and went out front. Hey, Ginny, could you check my schedule for the 4th?
Ginny looked at her over the rims of her reading glasses, You're clear from Thursday afternoon through Monday. Meg stared at her, then grinned. Thinking about doing something crazy? Ginny asked with a smile. I am going to do something crazy. About time. Meg was about to respond when Haley came in the front.
Hi, guys. Did you get my message that I'd be a little late today?
We did, Ginny said. How'd your exam go?
I think it went well. Let me put my stuff up and I'll be right back.
She went into the back and Ginny looked at Meg again. Go make the reservations. Your next appointment is running late.
Hell, I don't know why I even bother thinking I know anything in this place.
That's why I'm here, Ginny said. Meg laughed and went to her office to find a flight and get Mary involved in her subterfuge. Meg wheeled Destry around and rode back down the line of guests, chatting and laughing. She checked in with Bruce at the rear and rode back up to the front before they entered the forest. The trail narrowed through the trees, and Destry wouldn't have much room to maneuver, so Meg had to make sure everybody was all right for this leg of the ride. She inhaled deeply, loving the spicy smell of aspen bark and the rich, pungent odor of forest loam as she urged Destry forward. In less than a week, she'd be in Sacramento, and that thought provided delightful company all the way back to the ranch. Meg and Bruce helped Tom and two other seasonal hands get the 8 horses unsaddled and put out into the paddock. A few of the guests hung around chatting and watching. Meg liked being around most of the guests at the ranch. People from all over the world passed through the DR. This weekend, 2 college-aged women from Salisbury, England, traveling through the American West over the summer, had come to the DR because a friend of theirs in France recommended it. They had gone on the Sunday afternoon ride with Meg and stood watching her brush Destry, talking amiably about the differences between English and Western riding, before heading to the dining room for something to drink.
I've got the last 2, Meg, Bruce said, glancing at her from beneath the brim of his hat.
He had a voice like John Wayne's, a low, slow, monotone drawl.
Thanks, take it easy.
She nodded at him and headed over to Stan's office. She poked her head in. He was on the phone, his reading glasses perched on the end of his nose as he studied a couple of printouts on his desk. He smiled at her and motioned for her to take a seat. She did, and placed her hat on the chair next to her, and ran her fingers through her hair to dispel the hat head she knew she had. She listened idly to him and flipped through an issue of Western Horseman. He was trying to get a food order straightened out and a delivery date. After what sounded like an amicable arrangement, he hung up.
Getting ready to take off? He asked,
pulling his glasses off and tossing them onto a stack of papers.
Yep.
Good to see you, darling daughter. Oh, and before I forget, heard from Phil. He's planning on bringing Alicia up toward the end of July, maybe.
Yeah, I heard from him, too. Mom called me last week and she wants me to buy something feminine for when Phil comes through.
Meg set the magazine back on the edge of his desk. He stared at her for a long moment.
Like what? A square dancing dress?
Something in powder blue, Meg said, managing a smile.
Well, shit,
he said, shaking his head. He chuckled.
I laugh because
I know, otherwise we'd cry.
He shook his head.
How are things with the Roberts kid?
Okay.
She's going ahead with the restraining order, and her mom's filing for divorce, last I heard.
Good. Gender partner always welcome here. Just say the word.
You're the best dad ever.
He was quiet for a while.
I admit I had some reservations when you told me about yourself. I had to take a few long rides, do some thinking. Had a lot of late night talks with Alice. And then I realized that it ultimately doesn't matter. As long as you're happy and healthy and you find someone you love who treats you right, who the hell cares what the wrapper is?
Meg looked at him, something dawning on her. The inflection he'd put on Alice's name.
Alice, she started, remembering the visit when she thought he was acting a little goofy. Why didn't you tell me?
He looked at her, a little smile at the left-hand corner of his mouth.
It's fairly recent, he said,
and much to Meg's amusement, he blushed.
Dad, that's great. When did it start?
She leaned forward, elbows on his desk. He shrugged a shucks motion.
February, maybe, thereabouts, he cleared his throat. I guess we've always kind of liked each other. And I realized one day that I wasn't getting any younger, neither is she. I asked her to dinner, off the ranch.
He blushed again.
Meg gaped. Oh my God, my dad took a woman out on a date? Where'd you go?
The Wolf Hotel. Kinda nice, but casual, you know.
A date, but not a date, Meg grinned. Obviously, it went well. He cleared his throat and looked down at the desk.
She's selling her house in Saratoga.
She's going to live on the ranch permanently?
Well, hell, I sure hope so,
he retorted good-naturedly. Meg shook her head slowly, amused and happy for him. She keeps a secret, doesn't she? So do you, for that matter. He nodded.
She told me I had to be the one to tell you, but she said you might guess, though you've had a lot on your mind.
How come you didn't tell me?
Sometimes a man's got to play some things close to his vest, make sure he's making the right decisions.
Meg laughed. Okay, so I can talk to her about it? It's not some need-to-know basis thing?
Of course you can talk to her. You know how it is. People know, but they ignore it. As long as it doesn't interfere with them or the way things run, it's fine.
I am so happy for you both, Meg said. I always wondered if maybe there could be something between you and her. I mean, she's been here since I was 16, but that's great because you've become really good friends. You think you might get married? She looked up at him.
Don't know, maybe. We're both older, you know. Marriage isn't all that important to us since we're both pretty set in our ways, and we sure as hell don't feel the need to produce any more heirs. But we'll get hitched if it helps keep things legal and guarantees her something if I go first. I'd like to make sure she's taken care of, if it's okay with you.
Meg smiled, a lump in her throat. That's one of the sweetest things I've heard you say about a woman. Of course it's okay with me. So it's pretty serious, huh? She already knew his answer, but she wanted to hear him say it. His grin lit up his face.
Afraid so.
Holy shit! My dad is getting all goofy over a woman, he chuckled.
Yeah, I am. Speaking of which, when do you see Gina again?
Meg flushed and he started laughing. This weekend, she said.
Hell, your mom was right. You are my daughter. So how are things going there? You seemed pretty up when you got back from L.A.
Meg grinned. Great. They're going great. I mean, as well as can be expected. She's not quite sure what she wants to do next in terms of work, which is stressing her out. And she's got some emotional stuff to deal with after the bomb, and other kinds of stuff she's seen and been through. But she wants to work on it, sort through it.
Sounds like a plan,
Stan said.
She wanted to keep working for the Times?
She's not sure. She's interviewing Friday for a stateside job, but she's not sure she wants it.
How does she feel about what you're doing?
Meg smiled. She loves it. She thinks that my long-term plans are great. He steepled his fingers against his lips for a long moment before speaking.
Do you love her?
A deep warmth coursed through her veins, coupled with a series of little jolts. More than anything, I've got it bad. Really, really bad.
I think you've had it bad for her since you first met her,
he teased.
How does she feel about you?
Meg looked at him. She loves me, she said with the certainty of spring rain. He smiled.
Ask her to join you. It'd be great having her around.
She hesitated. We're talking, she said in a way that indicated she wasn't sure she wanted to continue discussing that topic. He shrugged.
Well, just let me know, because if we get this clinic off the ground, you might want to live nearby. And if Gina joins you, you're going to need more space. And I'll have to let the contractor know.
She looked at him puzzled. What are you up to?
Hun, if you're going to base at the ranch eventually, it makes more sense for you to have your own house out here than to commute from Saratoga or live above the dining room. You need your own place. And if Gina's going to be coming and going, it needs to be a nice, comfortable sort of place, with privacy.
Meg stared. You'd build me a house?
I'm building more housing at the DR.
Yes.
I'm also expanding my place because it's a bachelor's house, not a place for a woman like Alice. She's overseeing that.
He smiled.
So look at it that way. DR expansion. Making room for more.
He winked at her. How are you getting the money for all of this? She asked, blown away at what he was telling her. He leaned back and looked at her the way he did when she was getting ready to go to college, with a recognition that something had changed, and Meg was ready to take another set of reins.
You and I need to have a talk soon. I want you to know all about every little business thing we've got going on here. You're the primary inheritor. You need to know this, and you've been out of the loop for a while, for good reasons, obviously, but it's time to get caught up. I've made some good investments, and I've been saving for a house for you. Even if you never lived there, it'd be a house that somebody here could use. Stuff like that doesn't go to waste at the DR.
Meg shifted in her chair, suddenly uncomfortable. I guess I never really asked this, but is Mom still an inheritor? He smiled wanly.
No, I supported her until after the divorce, and the agreement was that if she ever remarried, my obligations would end. Remember, she went to work after the divorce finalized and let me know that she didn't need my help anymore. She didn't have to do that. I didn't update my will until after she let me know she was getting married. She's always been honest in her dealings with me, hon. She might not see eye to eye with either you or me, but she's always been fair in financial dealings, and I do appreciate that about her.
Meg studied her hands. I know I rag on her a lot, and it sounds shitty. He shrugged again.
She deserves what you gripe about. It is a part of her, the problem she has accepting you, but there are a lot of other parts, too. I wish she'd get past that one, though. It's a block to seeing what a wonderful daughter she has.
He shook his head sadly.
And she'd also know that powder blue is just not your color.
He sighed heavily, then looked at her, eyes twinkling. Meg grinned.
Damn, I cannot believe you. A woman, a house, fashion consultant. What next?
Shit, I hope that's it for a while.
He leaned back again, smiling.
So tell me, daughter mine, if it was legal for you here, would you marry Gina?
Her grin faded. I don't know.
Maybe that's the wrong question. Do you want to be with her?
Yes. Marriage is kind of a big question, though. I mean, we just started reconnecting, and she might stay in her job that takes her around the world again. Besides, it's not like any marriage we did would be legal federally, or even in states outside the one we married in. He nodded.
Things are changing, though. What is it now? 3 states?
4. Iowa just okayed it. And for a while, it was legal in California. That's in limbo now because of the election last fall.
Well, Iowa's closer than Massachusetts or Vermont, he grinned. And if you decide to do it, or even if you decide you want a legally committed relationship with her, hell, if you just want to be shacked up on a permanent basis, she'll be part of the DR family too. And I'll make sure both of you are part of the inner workings here. If she wants that, that is.
Damn, Dad, he smiled.
I realized something. Feels a lot better to just talk about things rather than file them away. And it feels good to talk to you about your life and what you want to do and the people who are important to you. If Gina was a man, I'd be asking you the same types of questions. Because she's not, well, we have to figure out ways around the system to make sure nobody messes with you. I hate that we have to do that, but that's how it is right now.
He paused, raising his eyebrows slightly.
So are you going to ask her about something more permanent?
Meg cleared her throat. I'm not sure. I feel like, yes, this is it, but I'm scared. I mean, we only kind of just started talking last month. He regarded her, a knowing expression in his eyes.
Sometimes you just know. But I know about that scared thing. You want her to say yes, but you're afraid she won't. And you're afraid she will, because then where do you go? But you also know that if she says yes, it'll be amazing. It's a hell of a ride.
A little smile played at the corners of his mouth.
Good luck.
Meg reached for her hat. She placed it on her lap, running her fingers over the felt. I'm so lucky. I can't believe sometimes how lucky I am.
I'm lucky too. I've learned a hell of a lot from you.
He pushed back from his desk.
But right now, I've got to check in on dinner.
Meg grinned wickedly. Oh, I'll bet. I'd say you're probably going to check in on something else that's cooking. He blushed furiously as Meg moved her eyebrows up and down. She stood and followed him outside.
Oh, he said, turning around. Make sure you tell Haley that any time she wants to come by and ride or just be on a ranch, we could always use a spare hand around here.
Meg threw her arm around his shoulders and steered him toward the dining room. I already have. Now let's go see what Alice is cooking, or something. He jabbed her lightly in the ribs and she laughed, chanting softly, Dad's got a girlfriend. Chapter 33. Moonshine watched her as she poured a glass of iced tea. I'll be right with you, your lordship. She put the pitcher back in the refrigerator and led him out back, then went to her office to wade through emails. The one from her mom she ignored. Sean had forwarded one that included a colleague's rewrite of a paper they were all working on together.
She had also texted Meg earlier. She was in Texas at a cousin's wedding and wanted Meg to know that straight weddings were boring, and would she please hurry up and propose to Gina so they could have a giant lesbian potluck blowout and put all these het weddings to shame. Meg smiled. Weddings. She had never been much for them, though she liked the idea of a commitment ceremony. Something sort of simple, with friends and supportive family, and then a big party. That would be fun. She thought about what that would be like. To stand up in front of everybody and declare her feelings publicly to Gina. It made her nervous, but excited. Hell, if it ever became legal for her to marry Gina in a place like Wyoming, she'd still go with the simple ceremony thing. Maybe at the ranch. She daydreamed for a while, waiting for the idea of a ceremony to make her anxious. It didn't. Instead, it made her giddy. The damper came with thoughts of Gina continuing her current job and going to London, and after that, who knows where. But it was different now, because Gina wasn't going to let go, and neither would Meg. It would be hard, she knew, to make this work if Gina was overseas most of the time. Visits would be difficult. Even coordinating conversations via phone or Skype would be tricky, given the different time zones. But so what? If that's what Gina wanted to do, Meg would support her decision. They'd get through it. She took a deep breath, but she wouldn't talk about it with her just yet, when she was all focused on getting through the interview and on thinking about the London opportunity. Her cell phone rang and she smiled as she answered. Hey, I was just thinking about you. Good stuff, came Gina's warm reply. Always. So are you ready for your interview? She made a scoffing sound. Please, it's only Wednesday. I'll start cramming tomorrow night. Is that how you got through college? Party all week and then a late night cram session? Only sometimes. How are you feeling about it? Fine. I do all right in interviews. Gina paused. I got a call from the higher-ups. They're willing to give me even more money than they originally said to send me to London. That's because they know you're worth every penny. Hell, you're worth double. Actually, no, you're priceless. Gina laughed. I'm something, that's for sure. I told them I was still interviewing for the stateside job. It's kind of nice, though, to have a bidding war over you. Just so long as I don't have to bid. Never. Good to know. Do you want to go to London? I'm pretty sure I don't want to. I think things will become clearer for me after the interview. Why do you say that? Did Mary let it slip that she was visiting? I don't know, Gina said. I just have a feeling that once I'm through that, I'll have a clearer idea about what I should do. You can learn a lot from an interview. Meg leaned back in her desk chair, relieved. She didn't appear to know about her visit. Okay, she said. Here I am, the stateside interviewer, and I think you're the best thing ever, and I offer you the job right there. What do you say? That I need the weekend to think about it, and I'll get back to you Monday? She sounded like she'd already rehearsed that answer. Do you have a deadline on deciding for the London thing? Kind of. They want to know toward the end of next week, since my leave is up around then. I can push it to the week after, but they really want to get somebody in position for it, which I totally understand, but I'm feeling a little pressured. They really like me, and they like the work I do, but I'm just not feeling it. Things changed for me after the bombing. No, that's not quite right. I was already thinking about leaving. The bombing just accelerated the process, she chuckled. It kind of accelerated a lot of processes. Well, if it helps, whatever you decide, I support. I can't say I'll be thrilled if you go overseas, but we'll figure it out, Meg said, getting the words up before she second-guessed herself. That means a lot to me. I'd like to talk to you a bit more about this, but I think after the interview is better for it, because I'll have a clearer idea of what's involved with that job. Is that okay?
That's totally fine with me. You know how I get with this deep stuff. Meg injected a little bit of teasing into her tone to lighten the mood.
You're doing fine. Better than fine. And holy hell, I miss you.
I miss you too.
After the interview, I want to talk about a visit, Gina sighed. Shit, that might have to wait until after Monday. Those meetings are going to deal with schedules, and they'll shed more light on this London thing. So Monday night I'll call you, and we'll figure out a visit.
Meg bit her lip to keep from blurting her surprise. That would be great. I'll come out there again if it's easier.
No decisions about that until Monday. But thinking about seeing you again makes me, hell, I don't have the words. Happy doesn't even get close to how I feel. Anyway, how are you? How was work? Meg smiled. Gina had always done that with her, asked about her day. She liked how it felt, how something as simple as that served as a connection even miles apart. She gave Gina the rundown, and by the time they signed off 30 minutes later, it was all Meg could do not to tell Gina that she'd see her in a couple of days. Still smiling, she went to retrieve moonshine from the backyard. "Hey, Meg, I just wanted to check in with you about the plan." Mary put an emphasis on plan that made it sound clandestine, since it's, you know, the day before you actually get here. "Cool." Meg checked her watch. Another 10 minutes before her next appointment. "Nothing's changed on my end with my flight schedule. I'll be in Fort Collins tonight, staying with a friend, and then tomorrow I'm having lunch there with some colleagues, and then I'll drive to Denver. Text or call if you need to get in touch with me before the flight." "Okay, so here's what's going down here. Gina's flying in from LAX. She stopped and laughed. "You probably already have her flight schedule, since I'm sure she told you. Whatever. Let's pretend we're Mission Impossible, and we have to get this right. She gets in at 1. Our folks are picking her up. Then around 6 or so, we're having the pre-4th dinner at my grandparents' house.
Are you sure it's okay for me to crash that party?"
"Oh my God, did you seriously just ask me that?"
"Sorry," she said sheepish.
"Everybody is so psyched to see you. And you've been to our dinners. Like, one more makes a difference."
"Okay, so how many people know I'm coming?"
"Practically everybody except Gina. And even though we're loud and Italian, we can keep secrets like this, like we're in the damn resistance or something and smuggling you over the border to Switzerland or some shit like that. Seriously, don't worry. Gina has no idea, and it's going to be the coolest fucking surprise ever."
Meg grinned. "Do I have to jump out of a cake?"
"No, but save that idea for future surprises. I'm sure she'd love it. Anyway, I'll pick you up. We'll go right to my grandparents. From there, we'll sneak around until we can go in for maximum surprise factor." Mary was practically giggling. "So stoked. I'm so glad you got a wild hair. And she's been super bummed that she doesn't get to go to Wyoming next weekend like she'd planned. So this will totally fix that." She stopped. "Gotta run. I'm at work. Anyway, let me know when you're boarding tomorrow and when you land. See you soon."
She signed off and Meg put her phone in her back pocket. She'd be headed down to Fort Collins in a couple of hours. She went out front, where Ginny gave her a look and a self-satisfied smile. Meg was about to respond when Mark came in from the back.
"Hey, Meg, can you do me a favor? I've got an emergency to deal with and I need someone to take care of scripts for my next 2 appointments. You've seen them a couple times before. Just refills and checkovers."
"Sure." He looked at Sandra.
"Can you squeeze them into Meg's schedule?"
"Already doing it," she said.
"Thanks." He gave Meg a relieved look. "Hope you don't have to stay too late. And if I don't see you, have a great trip."
He hurried into the back and Meg looked over at Ginny.
"Do I have no secrets either?"
"No," Sandra answered. "And we're all dying to know what happens next." She fluttered her eyelashes. "I'd like all the guys I date to take romance lessons from you and Gina. Do you think you could start some workshops?"
Meg stared, and behind her, Kelly snorted a laugh. Ginny pretended to be absorbed in reading something.
"I'll for sure run it by her," Meg said, trying to keep a poker face. "In the meantime, how about letting me know who I'm seeing for Mark?"
Sandra handed the files to her.
1 feline, 1 canine. You've seen the canine once this year and the feline once last fall."
Meg looked through the files and handed them back when Haley appeared from the back.
"Hey, Doc T, ready when you are for the next one."
"Okay, be right there."
"Oh, and Sandra?"
Sandra looked up at Haley.
"If Doc T and Gina can't do those workshops, Beth and I will."
She deadpanned before she retreated into the back. Sandra burst out laughing.
"Oh my Lord,"
Jeannie said with a gasp, as her own shoulders shook with laughter. Meg shook her head, but laughed too.
"There, see, base is covered."
And she followed Haley into the back. Chapter 34. The plane banked for its landing at the Sacramento airport, and Meg drummed her fingers on her thigh, wishing for it to just land already. She'd enjoyed not having to rush to get to the airport this time, and not having to worry that she was covered with the detritus of work. She wore clean jeans, a pair of Vans sneakers, and the Hawaiian shirt Gina had given her 5 years earlier. She toyed with one of the buttons and watched out the window as the plane descended over California's Central Valley. Her roommate in the aisle seat looked like a businessman,
and he'd spent most of the flight working on a laptop which he'd closed as they began their descent and placed it in the empty middle seat. He looked Latino, Meg decided, and she wondered what line of work he was in. He'd worn headphones most of the flight, so they didn't chat, though he smiled in greeting and handed her the cup of coffee the flight attendant brought to her. The plane dipped, and Meg heard the thunk and whoosh that meant the landing gear was down. She wiped her palms on her jeans and stared out the window again, wondering what sorts of things she'd done right to bring her to this place, 15,000 feet above Sacramento, and that much closer to Gina's embrace. She glanced over at her roommate. He had his eyes shut and head leaned back against the seat. She went back to staring out the window, watching the myriad structures below rush closer. 10 minutes later, the plane taxied to its jetway, and the struggle to disembark filled the cabin. Meg texted Mary to let her know she'd landed, and then she waited for her roommate to get his bag from the overhead bin before she did the same. She traveled this time with a small black duffel with a DR logo in gold on its face, which made it easy to pick out of a crowd if she had to check it. She chafed at how long it seemed to take for people to gather their things and exit, but she reminded herself that she'd be off the plane soon enough and to just relax. A few minutes later, her roommate stepped into the aisle and she followed. She hit the bathroom on her way to the airport exit, then checked her phone. Mary had texted back and told her to just follow the signs to ground transportation and text her when she was outside. She'd meet her there, driving a black Jetta. Meg made her way down to the lower level and exited through the automatic doors into Sacramento's air, the smell of exhaust and asphalt lingering in the diminishing heat from the day. She texted Mary and approached the curb for a vantage point where she could look for Mary's car. Excitement fluttered in her chest. She'd fibbed in her response text earlier that day to Gina and told her that she had to work a little late, but she'd call as soon as she could so Gina could tell her how the interview went. Better yet, Meg thought with a smile, I'll just fly my ass out to California so you can tell me in person. A black Jetta approached, then swooped to the curb nearby, and Mary practically jumped out before the car came to a complete stop.
Oh my God, you look fantastic.
Mary came around the front of the car and pulled Meg into a bear hug, nearly knocking the wind out of her.
So do you, Meg said with a gasp.
A hug from Mary was like getting a hug from a professional wrestler. She'd inherited the Morelli build, short and broad, unlike Gina, who displayed more of the Giordano side in her slightly taller, leaner frame. Of all the sisters, though, Meg thought Mary looked the most like Gina. Mary released her.
Here, put your bag in the back seat.
She opened the door, and Meg dutifully did as instructed, before getting into the passenger seat up front and buckling her seatbelt.
So the flight was okay?
Mary asked as she also buckled up.
Great. Mellow.
Mary pulled away from the curb, talking a mile a minute, just like old times, Meg thought, as she laughed at Mary's observations about Gina.
Oh my God, she hasn't said much about the interview, but she did say it went well. She's a little tired and cranky, probably because she hasn't talked to you yet since you're working late and all.
Mary giggled.
Mom is totally excited, and Nona is making baked ziti in your honor.
Meg looked over at her. Really? For me? She loved Gina's grandma's ziti.
Duh,
Mary smiled.
I told you, we love you. And Nona said, after you and Gina broke up, that you'd be back. She didn't say anything to Gina, but she told Mom and Angelica that you'd be back. They, of course, told me and Grace.
Meg looked out the windshield, an odd warp in time rippling through her chest.
And though she is tired and sort of cranky, Gina is totally goofy over you, Mary continued. It's beyond great. And it is so good to see you. How are you?
I'm doing well. Even better since your sister kept after me. Mary laughed and maneuvered through traffic before responding.
You two are meant to be together. And don't forget that, damn it.
Meg grinned. As Mary aged, she looked even more like Gina. Though her features would probably always be a bit softer than her older sister's, her cheekbones weren't as defined as Gina's, but Mary had similar dark eyes that twinkled when she teased, and the structure of her nose and forehead reminded Meg of Gina. Mary, however, had always worn her hair short. Today it was spiked almost straight up. She wore silver hoop earrings and a feminine pink sleeveless blouse tucked into tan shorts.
Oh, we got another care package from your dad and Alice, Mary continued. Cookies, jerky, rock candy. There are a couple bundles of fresh sage in there for Nona. Mom did manage to save some of Alice's cookies from this one for Gina, too. Your dad and Alice are the bomb. I love the DR.
Mary exited off Interstate 5 onto westbound Del Paso Road and stopped at a light.
So, are you ready? Mary asked.
Well, you know, I'm kind of the reserved, quiet rancher type. How do you think I'll do?
Like you're meant to be there, she said with another grin. I am so excited. Gina is going to... This is going to be beyond cool.
The light turned green and she accelerated, steering the car into the left-hand lane so she could eventually turn south. They drove in silence, much to Meg's amazement, for a while toward the outskirts of the city before they arrived at the turnoff that would take them to the Giordano farm. Mary pulled off the road when they were halfway there but left the car running.
Hold on, she said. Let me text one of our co-conspirators.
Her thumbs flew over the screen of her iPhone. She finished and sat back.
Too bad we won't be coming in under cover of darkness.
Should I get in the back and hide? Meg teased.
Hmm.
Mary appeared to give that serious consideration.
Nah, they're going to make sure Gina's not near any windows that face the drive.
Her phone made a weird little whistle and she checked it.
Cool. Grace says to drive on up. They've got Gina in the kitchen drinking wine with Angelica and Nona. She paused. I'm sure it's not the bad wine. Oh God, that was funny, Meg. Mom still laughs about that. Anyway, Gina won't be able to hear the car, though she'll hear the dogs barking, but she knows I'm coming, so no biggie. They'll keep her in the kitchen while everybody gets set up.
Wait, set up? The butterflies in Meg's stomach started dive-bombing each other.
Well, yeah, like a surprise party kind of thing. Don't worry, all you have to do is show up.
She moved her eyebrows up and down.
We do surprises, right, girlfriend?
I now see where Gina gets her instigator streak, Meg said with a nervous laugh.
Damn right. It's on both sides of the family.
Mary put the car in gear and continued toward the farmhouse. The huge circular driveway was filled with cars, and she pulled up behind a blue minivan. A big black lab and two smaller mixed breeds bounded over, the smaller dogs yipping and wiggling.
I don't think you've met this crew. The lab is Max, and the fat little dog is Ralphie. His brother is Richie, Mary said. So you can yell at them if they annoy you.
She smiled and opened her door. Ralphie and Richie immediately appeared, wiggling and whining with canine excitement.
Out of the way, guys, she said as she got out.
Meg got out too, and Max gave her a sniffing once-over.
You must smell like doggy date night, Mary said,
as all three dogs suddenly converged on Meg and began sniffing.
Goes with the territory. Hi, guys.
Meg gave them each some pats, making soothing noises, though her heart was pounding a mile a minute. Gina was inside, just steps away.
Ready?
Mary asked, eyes sparkling. She didn't wait for Meg's response and instead started walking toward the house. Meg followed, much to the dog's disappointment, as her movements interrupted their investigation of all the smells on her shoes and pants. She wiped her palms on her jeans before she walked up the steps to the wide covered porch, a couple paces behind Mary. The inside door was open, the only barrier between her and Gina a screen door, through which she heard voices and laughing. The odors of fresh bread and tomato sauce also greeted her, and she inhaled, remembering the first time Gina had brought her here, a few months after they'd started dating, August, just before Meg had to go back to school. That was the first time she'd had Luisa Giordano's baked ziti, and Gina's grandmother had told her in broken English that she made Gina happy so she would cook something good for Meg. Meg paused at the top of the porch steps, awash in memories and excitement. And before Mary was close enough to open the screen door, Marcella pushed it open with enough force that had it hit Mary, it would have hurt. Marcella beckoned Mary to go in first, and then she fixed her gaze on Meg, and a smile broke across her features like the sun coming out after a rainy day.
Buonasera, Meg, she said,
the laugh lines at the corners of her eyes crinkling with her smile.
Hi, Mrs. Marcella. It's really good to see you. It's so good to see you. Come in, she directed with the warm authority of an Italian matriarch. Inside. Gina only thinks Mary is here. We made sure she got the good wine, she laughed and reminded Meg of Gina.
Meg stepped inside and into another time warp. The American colonial-style furnishings remained where Meg remembered them last. nice compliments to the dark stained wood floors of the historic farmhouse. Even the curtains at the windows hadn't changed, at least not that she could tell. Heavy red winter drapes tied aside, while filmy white lacy affairs fluttered in the breezes through the open windows. She stood staring, and it was like walking into the kitchen at the ranch, warm, smelling delicious, and filled with love and laughter. Marcella took her hand and guided her toward the dining room, where several, maybe 20, she estimated, people stood talking. Meg recognized some, but she didn't recognize the kids that ranged in age from maybe 5 to 12. They all turned when she approached, and one little girl bounced up and down, excited. Grace put a hand on the little girl's head to quiet her, and Marcella made a motion to continue talking as before. Grace gave Meg a grin and wave. "Wait here," Marcella said to Meg. She positioned her next to Grace, who gave her a quick hug. "It's good to see you," Grace said. She'd inherited the Giordano body type, and she wore her hair long, pulled back into a ponytail. The little girl stared up at Meg, curious. "Good to see you, too," Meg said to Grace. To the little girl, she said, "Hi." The little girl smiled at her and took Grace's hand. Marcella glanced around, as if ensuring everyone was in their places. Then she held the swinging door open and stuck her head into the kitchen. "Gina," she said, "we're one place setting short on the big table. Can you take care of it?" "Are you sure? I thought I counted right," came Gina's voice, and Meg's heart sped up even more. She bit her lip to keep from saying anything. "No, you missed one. There's room at the end, next to you," Marcella said, and Meg wondered if she had acting experience, since she gave no indication that anything was afoot. "Okay," Gina said. Meg heard other voices in the kitchen, including Mary's, before Marcella stepped away from the door and motioned for everyone to be quiet. The door opened as Gina came into the dining room. "Ma, I'm sure I counted right." Marcella shrugged. "You missed one." And at that, everyone yelled, "Surprise!" Gina started, shocked, as the adults clapped, whooped, and moved aside, revealing Meg. Gina stared. "Oh my God," she managed. Meg grinned. "I was in the neighborhood. Thought I'd stop by." Her heart practically slammed out of her chest at the sight of her. She started toward Gina, and then she was in Gina's arms, Gina's lips against her cheek amidst more cheering and clapping. "Oh my God," Gina whispered near her ear. "I cannot believe this." "I missed you," Meg said as she pulled away to look at her. "I couldn't wait."
"And everybody knew?"
"Pretty much. Who knew your loud Italian family could keep secrets?" Gina laughed. She hugged Meg again, then reluctantly released her.
"You're right, Ma. I didn't count right."
Marcella leaned in and kissed first Gina on the cheek and then Meg.
"But I did," she winked.
"We'll eat in 20 minutes, Gina. Why don't you show Meg around while we get dinner out?" she said, her tone innocent. "She hasn't been here in a while. Mary, I need your help in the kitchen."
Mary gave Meg a double thumbs up and followed Marcella. Gina took Meg's hand and led her back outside onto the front porch. She checked to make sure no one was with them, and she pulled Meg into a kiss, the kind that made Meg's knees weak and spread heat down her thighs, the kind that made her think of sweat, bare skin, and rumpled sheets. Gina stopped and cupped Meg's face in her hands.
"This is for real, right? You're here and I'm not dreaming?"
Meg gripped her hips and pulled her close, then kissed her again, and Gina kept her hands on Meg's face and returned the kiss, her mouth both soft and demanding. And all Meg knew at that moment was the hammering of her heart and heat washing down her legs. The feel of Gina's lips and tongue and the warmth of her hands.
"Hey, horn dogs,"
came Mary's voice from the door.
"Dinner."
She moved away, laughter trailing after her. The screen door made a soft little bang as it closed. Gina groaned against Meg's lips.
"I can't get enough of you."
"Good. We'll talk about that later." Meg gave her another kiss, but it turned into a few more until Gina finally pulled away.
"Dinner," she said, "or Mary will drag my cousins out here too," she grinned. "Drawback to a large Italian family, all up in everybody's business."
Meg laughed as Gina took her hand and led her back inside.
Chapter 35. Dinner with a houseful of Morellis and Giordanos was more like a gathering at a sporting event than a meal. Meg never understood how anything ever got resolved or discussed, because a constant stream of laughter, shouting, and dozens of different conversations flew across the table, across the room, and bounced around the house from all different directions. Meg had learned after her first experience at a Morelli and Giordano meal to just sit back and go with the flow. Luisa bantered mostly in Italian with her husband Antonio and Gina's parents Marcella and Franco. The latter had hugged Meg harder than Mary had. One of Luisa's brothers had come. Gino was at the table, and two of his sons and one daughter had brought their families, which explained two of the younger children. Angelica had brought her son and daughter. Gina's other sister, Grace, lived in nearby Davis, where her husband taught at the University of California. They'd brought their two daughters and son. Gina's brother, Tony, sat at the opposite end of the table with his wife. All of the people, plus the dogs, rounded out the general cacophony of a typical Morelli-Giordano family meal. Gina took a chair to the right of the head, and Luisa sat at the head, while Meg sat on Gina's right, and Marcella sat next to Meg. But the seating arrangements often shifted as people bounced around the table to talk to each other. Luisa cooked old country style, which involved antipasto, a pasta dish, a meat dish, and myriad vegetable dishes. Luisa and her kitchen help had prepared baked ziti and fish as the main dishes. Meg placed olives, cheese, and prosciutto on her plate as the antipasto dishes made their way around the table. Marcella went into the kitchen but returned with two fresh bottles of white wine, and she filled Meg's and topped off Gina's. She gave Meg's shoulder a squeeze before she moved on to fill other glasses. Grace placed more bottles of sparkling water on the table, and those made their way around as well. Gina poured some into Meg's water glass. Several people took turns bringing dishes to the table, and Meg wondered how many dishes Luisa actually owned. It was like being at the DR, the number of people Luisa was feeding today. After the main dishes and side vegetable dishes had been served, Franco stood with his glass and on cue, everyone quieted. He had lost weight since Meg had seen him last, but he was still built like an ex-boxer. Gina's father had started his working life as warehouse staff, moving and stacking boxes. He had worked his way up to manager, and now he oversaw several different aspects of the company. Meg knew him as an amiable jokester who laughed even when the joke was on him. But Gina said he had a temper, too, though he rarely let it show. Meg saw parts of Gina in his smile and eyes, and when he sang, she heard where Gina had gotten some of her own talent. He cleared his throat.
"Welcome to all of us who share this meal."
He looked around the table at everyone.
"And thanks to God that Gina is here with us. A little worse for wear,"
he shrugged in his exaggerated fashion,
"but we'll take her."
Snickers and giggles erupted.
"And bless those who could not be here. We hope they will be for the next one."
Franco raised his glass and grinned at Meg.
"And a special toast to Meg, who has finally realized that Gina is her cross to bear."
Several people started laughing, and Meg smiled, embarrassed, feeling as if her heart might explode from the welcome. From what she saw in Gina's eyes, from how it felt to feel Gina's hand covering hers.
"God bless you, Meg, for coming," Franco said. "A familia. A familia,"
came the response. Meg took a swallow of wine amidst the sounds of silverware on plates and loud conversations.
"Okay?" Gina asked, leaning toward her a question in her expression.
Meg brushed a lock of hair away from Gina's forehead. "I am so much more than okay." Gina brought Meg's hand to her lips and kissed her fingers.
"I know that feeling," she said.
"Ah!" Luisa said from the head of the table, looking first at Gina, then at Marcella.
"Vedi, ecco l'amore."
Marcella laughed, leaned over to give Meg a one-armed hug. Gina grinned and caught Meg's eye.
She said, "You see, that's love."
And she leaned in and kissed Meg on the left cheek, while Marcella kissed her on the right.
"Wait," Mary said from across the table. "How is it that Meg scores two Italian women in one night?"
Marcella made a gesture at Mary that started the other end of the table laughing. Meg laughed too, thinking about Irene, trying to envision what she'd do in a gathering like this.
Easy. She would never be at a gathering like this.
She felt a little pang, but she buried it and looked over at Mary.
You had your chance, Meg said, shaking her head sadly. That ride from the airport could have been three.
Mary threw her napkin at Meg, who caught it and threw it back. Gina draped her arm around Meg's shoulders.
Maybe you should have taken the long way home.
She quirked an eyebrow, which sent a little charge through Meg's abdomen. Mary made a please sound in the back of her throat.
Whatever. Meg, are you sure you don't have any long-lost sisters?
Sorry, none that I know of. And trust me, you do not want to go shaking the family tree, especially on my mom's side.
Too many fruits? Mary teased.
I wish. Too many nuts.
Marcella hooted with laughter and hugged Meg again.
Welcome back, she said.
And Meg felt like she might cry. Gina's hand rested on Meg's left thigh, comforting and arousing, and conversation and laughter filled the room. Meg covered Gina's hand with her own and traced Gina's fingers with her fingertips. Gina turned to look at her, and Meg saw that first night they spent together in her eyes, remembered it like it was yesterday, though Gina wore the last 8 years in the laugh lines around her eyes and the more pronounced planes of her face.
God, I missed you.
Meg gently squeezed Gina's hand where it rested on her thigh, oblivious to their surroundings.
I missed you back.
Gina leaned close and brushed her lips along Meg's cheek, sending a lightning strike through Meg's jeans.
All right, Mary shouted as others began clearing some of the dishes.
Meg knew that someone in the kitchen had already started making espresso.
Story time, Mary announced. Mom, you want to start? How is it that Meg is here with us this weekend?
Cheers went up, and Marcella and Mary together described the plan they concocted with Meg. Throughout, Gina kept one hand either on Meg's thigh, her arm, or her shoulder. Meg draped her arm around Gina's shoulders and leaned into her, caught in the moment, rekindling promises in the contact between them. At the story's end, everyone applauded, and Luisa entreated everyone to manja, even as Grace brought out a platter loaded with cannoli. Meg shared a cannoli with Gina and sipped on an espresso, while she chatted back and forth with Luisa and Marcella, Gina interpreting for her grandmother. And then Franco burst into song, an Italian ballad. When he was done, Gina's grandpa Antonio picked it up with a more rollicking tune that several people joined in on, including Gina. Meg's breath caught as she listened to Gina's sultry, blues-tinged alto caress the lyrics like a lover come home.
Your ribs feeling better then? Letting you take those deep breaths? Meg asked with a flirtatious dig when Gina finished singing.
Much.
Gina quirked an eyebrow playfully. Meg took another bite of cannoli, trying to give herself something to do before she imploded under the influence of Gina's voice, Gina's laugh, Gina's warm hand on her thigh.
Gina,
Angelica called from the kitchen doorway.
Sing us a song.
Si,
Luisa and Antonio said at once.
Una canzone.
Gina shrugged and drained the last of her wine as she had downed a shot of tequila 10 years ago on stage at the River Rest.
Any requests? She asked.
Sing something for Meg,
Angelica said from the doorway.
How long do you have?
Gina retorted good-naturedly, drawing a round of laughs. Gina looked at Meg and grinned. She began singing, and it took two lines before Meg recognized Jules Jupiter, which Gina turned into an a cappella smoky blues grind that brought sweat to Meg's bones.
You make me so crazy, baby.
She arched her eyebrows at Meg and purred the chorus, grinning, her voice rising and Meg's heartbeat matched an insistent throb between her thighs. Gina slid into the next verse, dropping her voice to a growl, noting that her hands were travelers that had crossed oceans and lands, but, and here came a plaintive sigh, they were too small on the continent of Meg's skin. Mary whooped in appreciation, and Franco pounded on the table enthusiastically.
Wandering, wandering, Gina sang,
though she changed the next lyrics to a little more PG-rated. Meg swallowed a groan and blushed. Marcella reached over and pinched her cheek, laughing. Gina leaned in and crooned,
oh, oh, Jupiter, you make me so crazy.
And Meg remembered 10 years ago, standing in a crowd, listening to Gina turn a cute country tune into a sultry, flirtatious groove that ran its nails down Meg's back and left her aching in all the right places. Gina finished with animated accompaniment from the table. She let the last note fade in the heat Meg knew was emanating from her shirt. Marcella shrieked in appreciation, and Mock fanned herself as everyone applauded, including Meg.
Girl, Mary said to Meg, you'd be an idiot not to follow that home.
Her comment brought a flush to Meg's cheeks, which only incited further ribbing and shouts. In spite of the teasing, she leaned in and kissed Gina on the cheek before she stood, bringing a nod of approval from Louisa.
Everybody, she started, gesturing with her hands for quiet. Marcella and Mary shushed in tangent, and all eyes turned to Meg expectant. I just want to say thanks, grazie, to all of you here for your hospitality, and I don't have the words to tell you how grateful I am to be here, but I am.
She turned her head and caught Gina's gaze.
And I definitely don't have the words to tell you how grateful I am that Gina's here with us, and still singing.
She reached down and Gina took her hand. Meg then addressed the rest of the group again, still holding Gina's hand.
Thanks for welcoming me and for accepting me. I'm the luckiest woman on the planet right now.
Excuse me, Gina interrupted. Actually, I'm the luckiest woman on the planet because you're here.
Everybody burst into cheers and clapping, and Marcella hugged Meg yet again. Gina got up and leaned in close to Meg.
I'm going to help clean up. You want some more espresso?
If there is any, yes.
I'll make an Italian out of you yet.
Gina smiled and brushed another kiss along Meg's cheek. For the next few minutes, Gina's sisters monopolized Meg's time in the living room until Gina returned with two more small cups. She handed one to Meg.
There's more, she told her sisters.
Be right back, Mary said.
Angelica looked at Grace, who nodded, and Angelica went after Mary. Meg sipped from her cup. Gina had already sweetened it the way Meg liked it, and she made an appreciative noise. One of Gina's cousins ambled up to ask Grace something, and Meg took another sip, enjoying the vibe in the house.
I love your family, she said over the rim of her cup.
That's because you don't have to live with them.
You could say that about anybody's family. And I didn't grow up with much extended family.
I disagree. The ranch family is your extended family, Gina smiled. You don't have to be related to someone to call them family, she shrugged. And not everybody in the vast Morelli network is comfortable with those of us who aren't straight, but a lot are, and for that I am very grateful.
Me too.
Meg watched as people started to leave. She checked her watch. It was almost 9.
Tired? Gina asked.
A little.
Are you okay staying at my folks' house?
Meg remembered it. A sprawling California ranch style in which Gina's parents had one wing and guests the other.
Yes.
Mary returned, carrying her own espresso.
So you gonna crash at my place or at home? She asked Gina. We were just talking about that.
Gina looked over at Meg.
The folks?
Mary shrugged.
Okay, shouldn't be too bad. It's big enough that Mom and Dad probably won't hear anything from your side of the house.
She gave them both an innocent look and a smirk.
Hopefully.
Meg hid her smile behind the rim of her cup.
I think you're just jealous, Gina said, teasing. Want me to go to Wyoming and find you a girlfriend? That's actually not a bad idea.
Mary threw Meg a grin.
They seem to groom right out there.
Marcella moved into the conversation.
Meg, you must be tired.
She looked at Gina.
Where will you stay tonight?
At your house, Gina said.
Take the van.
Marcella handed her a set of keys.
Mary or Angelica will drop us off later.
Go, Ma, Mary said. Staying out late?
She did a little hip gyration, and Marcella laughed.
We'll see you tomorrow, Marcella said.
She gave Meg another hug and went back toward the dining room.
Oh, by the way, Gina said to Meg. Tomorrow is the 4th, and you'll be inundated with Morellis and Giordano's again.
Mary giggled.
Dad loves to grill on the 4th. He likes showing off his grill skills. He starts around 10 in the morning doing his prep, and people start coming over around 2. Then bunches of us go and watch fireworks. Or if you're feeling adventurous, you can get up on the roof and watch some from there.
Sounds like fun.
Meg finished her coffee, and Gina took her cup.
It is, Mary said. Unless you want alone time.
She did another hip gyration, which made Gina laugh.
Point taken.
Gina balanced her own empty cup in Meg's and took Mary's.
Be right back.
Mary waited until Gina was out of earshot before she spoke.
Thanks, Meg.
For?
Coming out here. For giving this another chance.
Meg shook her head.
I think it's more that Gina gave me another chance.
Two-way street, girlfriend. And don't forget your stuff. My car's open.
Just make sure Ralphie doesn't sneak in before you close the door. That's one of his things.
Meg gave her a hug. Thanks for all your help in this. Thanks for picking me up.
To bring you two together? I would have flown the damn plane. Now go on and stay up late.
She grinned wickedly as Gina approached.
Ready? Gina asked Meg.
Yes.
Good, but it'll take us another 20 minutes to leave.
She took Meg's hand and they went to say their goodbyes, which did take about as long as Gina had said. Finally, they settled in the blue minivan Mary had parked behind.
You know, Gina said as she drove back toward the main road, I love you in that shirt, but I am dying to get you out of it.
Oh? How do you propose to do that?
You'll see.
You think you can be that persuasive? Gina glanced over at her and sparks slammed Meg's heart at the expression in her eyes.
I know so, she said.
When they were at last alone, when Gina started crooning Jupiter again, and her hands wandered gently over Meg's bare skin, and her lips followed their path, Meg knew that Gina had been right all along. No, Meg couldn't resist her, shouldn't have tried. And now here she was, wrapped up safe with her, a million different sensations running the length of her body and charging the air between them, and leaving them panting, sweat, and heat-slicked in the aftermath of second chances. Gina had been right all along, and Meg was just fine with that. Chapter 36. Meg rolled over, half asleep, but she snapped fully awake when she realized that Gina wasn't in bed with her. She lay still listening, not in the bathroom. She swung her legs over the side of the bed and located her duffel on the floor. She pulled out a pair of shorts and a tee by feel and put them on before heading out to the patio through the open door. In the light from the nearly full moon, she saw Gina sitting in a plastic patio chair in shorts and tee, legs stretched out in front of her.
Hey, did I wake you up?
No. Meg pulled a chair next to Gina's. How long have you been out here? She asked as she sat down, the plastic cool against the backs of her thighs.
20 minutes, maybe, give or take. She gestured at the sky. Watching fireworks. You know how people get around the 4th. Have to shoot them off before, during, and after for the rest of the summer, restrictions or not. But it is a pretty night.
Meg reached for Gina's hand and interlaced their fingers. They sat in silence for a few minutes. Bad dream? Meg asked after a while.
No. Gina squeezed her hand gently. I've been doing all right with those.
Fireworks, then? Gina squeezed her hand again.
Maybe a little. But seeing them and making the connection between that and the sound helps. I'm okay.
Meg stroked the back of Gina's hand with her thumb, waiting for her to verbalize what she hadn't yet.
I was offered the stateside job, Gina said. I was going to tell you in our phone conversation tonight, but clearly I got sidetracked when a certain someone showed up unexpectedly.
She looked over at Meg and smiled. That's great. Meg leaned over and kissed her on the cheek, though her stomach nodded. Congratulations. Was I right? Did they offer it during the interview?
Not quite. They called an hour later.
What the hell? It took them that long to figure it out?
Gina laughed, probably checking their budgets. I'm the subject of a bidding war, after all.
Meg studied her profile. You don't sound all that enthused.
I haven't been. I'm still not.
So nothing in the interview made you excited about it?
She sighed. Not really. But it did clarify a few other things.
Meg waited.
It's good money. Gina shifted her position. But even though it's a stateside position, allegedly, they'd also want me back overseas for part of the time. One of the guys who got injured with me emailed yesterday and practically begged me to come back. They all miss me.
She lapsed into silence, and Meg felt as if time folded over itself. When Gina told her 8 years ago about the overseas job and how she really wanted to take it, but she wouldn't if Meg wanted her to stay, and she'd do long distance, she had said, because she couldn't imagine being without her. Meg's throat tightened.
Well, what do you think you want to do?
Not that. I told them I wasn't interested in being overseas again, that I hadn't been in a while. Hell, I've been telling them that since before the bombing. Get me back stateside, I told them. So they offered Western countries instead of war zones. I've done that route too, and I'm not in that mood either, she sighed.
At least I know what I'm going to tell the London people this week.
So what does that mean for you in terms of work?
Gina held Meg's hand tighter. I'm burned out, Meg. I felt it coming on over a year ago. I don't want to say that I don't ever want to go do a story or two overseas. That's not it. I just don't want to be based there for months at a time, worrying about whether I might not make it back. And even if I took the job in London, I'd still have to be in London. I'd be living there. And I'm just not feeling that. No offense to the UK.
Okay, I get that. But if you really like working overseas, are you maybe using what happened as an excuse for not going back?
No,
Gina responded, a little defensively, maybe. Because if you want to go back to doing your overseas job, then do it. Don't stay here because you think it's what you're supposed to do after what happened. A familiar ache in her heart started, but this time she was ready. This time, whatever happened, she would not let go. Gina started to say something, but Meg interrupted. Before we get into this, just so you know, I'm not going anywhere. I can't say I'll be excited about you leaving, because I'll worry about you every damn day and I'll miss the hell out of you. But I want you to be happy. And if going back to the Overseas Bureau is really what you want to do, underneath what you're saying, then we'll just work around it.
She tried to swallow, but the lump in her throat precluded it.
I'm not letting go this time. I know what that's about, and I am not losing you again, she said it fiercely, as if she dared the past to repeat.
Gina leaned over, kissed her on the cheek, and took Meg's hand. You have no idea what it means to me to hear you say that, she said softly, with obvious relief. But I don't want to go back to the Overseas Bureau. I've wanted out for a while now. Hell, I was thinking about it when Sharon and I got together. And when Sharon and I broke up, I knew I needed to make some changes.
She brought Meg's hand to her lips and kissed it.
One of those was you. I thought you were still with Kate, but I didn't care. I needed to have you in my life somehow. And if Kate made you happy, then I'd settle for friendship.
She rubbed the back of Meg's hand along her cheek, and Meg closed her eyes momentarily, caught up in the sensation of Gina's skin against hers.
I've talked with my editor and a couple of the other higher-ups, Gina continued. They know how I feel. They want me to stay, which I'm taking as a compliment. But I think they also know that I'm done in a lot of ways. They're trying to entice me with more money, which is a nice thought. But this was never about money.
So the stateside job would be here and abroad? Meg asked, trying to move her chair even closer.
Mostly stateside for the first year, but a lot of domestic travel. Then overseas again. They're calling it a stateside position because I'd be based with the LA Bureau, but with all the shifts in technology, it'll involve a hell of a lot more than in the past, she shrugged. Not that tech changes scare me. I keep up with that shit and do the social media thing. Which reminds me, I haven't friended you on Facebook.
Meg smiled. I prefer the real thing to virtual, thank you.
Same here.
She was quiet for a while.
After the interview, I realized that the job's not speaking to me. I'm not like, oh my God, I must have this job. It's a lot of travel and a lot of work. It's basically what I was doing overseas, except I wouldn't be as overseas as I was. At least, not for the first year. And even though I don't necessarily have to worry about some of the things here that I did over there, I'm just... Fuck, Meg, I'm tired. I'm tired of constantly traveling, of constantly having to be on, and honestly, I'm tired of... She hesitated. I'm tired of not feeling like I have a place in the world. I don't live anywhere. My address for the last 6 years has been either a post office box or my parents. I have an apartment I don't live in. I have a car I hardly see or drive. No real possessions except shit I've collected overseas and put into storage. I feel like a nomad. And I'm tired of that. I want something more.
She sighed and tilted her head to the sky.
I want you. I want us.
She turned her head and Meg could see her features.
I want to keep writing, doing journalism, but I need a new venue. I'm just not sure what that is. What I am sure about is you.
She leaned back in her chair.
And yes, I have some shit I need to work through. The physical stuff will heal up okay, but the emotional stuff might not be so easy. And I'm sitting here with you, the most incredible woman I've ever met who is back in my life. And I wonder how the hell I can shove lifetimes into weekends once or, if I'm lucky, twice a month with you. Probably less.
She made a frustrated noise.
It's not enough. I want more,
She shook her head. I'm sorry, I'm just trying to figure things out.
She stroked Meg's fingers with her thumb. So I'm sitting out here wondering how it is I got so lucky to have you in my life again, and what I need to do to get more time with you.
Meg watched her in the moonlight. A series of muffled pops and snaps a few streets over punctuated her thoughts.
So what you're saying, Meg said after a few more seconds, is that you need to figure out what you want to do with your life. You're tired of not having a base, and you sort of like me. She said it carefully, heart pounding against her ribs at the direction she was about to take this conversation.
Actually, I love you madly, and I prefer this order. I love you madly. I'm tired of not having a base, and I need to figure out what I want to do next.
In her mind's eye, Meg saw two different paths. She swallowed, hearing Sean telling her that second chances were lifetimes apart. She took a deep breath. So make me your base. She nearly held her breath as the words exited her mouth. No going back. She'd chosen. The silence stretched between them, weighted with either possibility or disappointment, depending on Gina's response. The night air brought goosebumps to Meg's skin, but she ignored the chill and realized she really was holding her breath.
What are you saying? Gina finally asked, looking at her in the moonlight.
Meg tried to read her expression, but decided it didn't really matter. She had to get this out. Come to Wyoming, she said in a rush. You don't have to stay there always. If you get restless or you want to go back overseas, or even do your hardcore journalism in the States, and go do it. But come back to me in Wyoming every now and again. Stay for a few weeks or months, a year, whatever. I want to be your base. She gripped Gina's hand a little harder. I want to be your place in the world. Gina stared at her.
Oh my God, she said, tone full of astonishment.